Wretched Radio begins in 3, 2, 1.
It's time for the church to acknowledge that we have brothers and sisters who are gay.
LGBTs have to find a household of worship that reflects what your views are and what you believe.
A gay person who still wants to attend church after the way the church has treated the gay community, I'm telling you, they have more faith than I do. They have more faith than a lot of you.
What's not loving is to look someone in the eye when God says they are in jeopardy of an eternity in hell and merely wink and nod at their sin because you're afraid of being called names.
It's time for Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Lessons for young and old alike. I do not know why I'm talking like an elderly Manhattan Jewish man. This is Wretched Radio. I think that's what it was. My impersonations, they're subtle. You can't always tell what they are, which doesn't always make an impersonation all that good. But I think people feel more rewarded when they work for it. To try to figure out what the impression, you know, some of these guys, they do impersonations and they're like spot on. And it's like, well, anybody can figure out who that is. Not here at Wretched Radio. We like to offer something so pathetic. There's a reward if you actually figure it out. I think that was an elderly Jewish Manhattan man who probably has a propensity to complain, not because he's Jewish or because he lives in Manhattan, but perhaps just because he's old. Have you noticed? No doubt you have. Older folks have a tendency to lament their current malady. Whatever the ache and pain is, it seems that we're more inclined to articulate what we're currently experiencing in our body. And that's understandable, I think, because aches and pains change when you get older. When you're younger, your knee hurts and you're like, ah, that, and you just kind of shake it out or you do some violent stretching move and then on you go with life. I mean, that's pretty much how young people respond because their bodies are so resilient and they're perhaps not as aware that their bodies can fall apart. An older person feels a knee pain and they immediately think, is it a tumor? Am I going to have to get surgery on this? Go ahead. And see, you thought that was the same Jewish man from Manhattan. It wasn't.
Oh, it was a different one.
It was about a 70-year-old Jewish man from Pittsburgh. It was very subtle. What's the name of the guy who does the Trump impersonation that is bang on and he laughs at himself throughout the impersonation?
Oh, Shane Gillis.
Is he clean?
Not so much.
Nah. That's a bummer because I've seen his impersonations. I mean, anybody could do a spot-on impersonation lacking subtlety like mine. Why do older people tend to share what's going on with their aches and pains? It's because they could be serious. And most likely, there's a pretty good chance going to be dealing with them until they die. And so I think they increase the bandwidth in our brain because there's more of them. And you don't just shake them off. And they don't just go away. And you're thinking to yourself, cool, more doctor's visits. Now I've got to get a new specialist for that. Now I've got to do more Googling to become an expert on this. By the way, Jimmy, if you need to know anything about diabetes, you let me know.
Okay.
I have become an expert on the subject.
Ah.
A buddy of mine, he thought he maybe was going to be diagnosed with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
I Googled it, and I read several of the questions that pop up.
Mm-hmm.
So anything you need to know, just ask me, because I know everything now, because I didn't even look at an article. All I did was read the question. You know, that's suddenly I've done all the homework necessary to let my friend know what he needs to do to deal with his diabetes. You get older and you feel an ache and pain. You Google it and you're more inclined to believe the worst than the best. And you want to get it off of your chest and you're willing to tell people about it. On the other end of the spectrum, you have young people who maybe aren't inclined to want to hear about it. how do we work through this? What really is kind of like a marital issue, isn't it? Isn't this what marriage is about? That you, there's something about another person that maybe bugs you. The young person is kind of annoyed because all the old people talk about is how many pills they're taking and what's going on with their trick knee. On the other hand, an older person is like, why don't these kids care? They'll understand someday. Wait until they have an elbow that doesn't bend. You have to eat with you. You can't get the fork to your mouth. What's the matter with these kids? How do you deal with those types of dynamics? I think it starts by understanding what it is. One of the reasons I think we have a whole lot of conflicts is because we fail to categorize what the issue is. Is it a sin issue? Is it a sin for an old person to bellyache about their bursitis? Is it a sin if they want to share every day about the same malady? And the answer is on the face of it, no. Now, could it be because they're wallowing and they're looking for pity? They just want some attention? Sure. But on the face of it, it's not a sin. At best, I think you would simply have to categorize it as a potential agitation. It just bugs me. I don't like hearing about it. Why do they have to keep yapping on about what's wrong with their big toe? It's just something that you'd rather not hear about, but it's not a sin. So what does that mean? Who deals with, who gives in that sort of dynamic? This applies not just to old and young and body aches. This applies to every single relationship, marriage context, absolutely, with your kids and with your fellow church members. There are going to be people who do things that bug you. And I think the first question that we should always ask is this a sin? Is it a preference? Or is it a mere agitation? Received an email from a young person. And I think there's lessons that both parties can learn from this. Old people who tend to carp about what's going wrong with themselves, and young people who tend to not really want to hear about it. I think we can both learn in this because this email, it was so specific. Let's learn together, shall we? I'm 30, so I'm young. I have overall experienced a weird phenomenon when I was younger, and I don't understand it. I would say something to an older woman like, as I get older, I realize I prefer hymns to contemporary Christian music. And the response has been, well, you're young, just wait. And this person writes, I get that everywhere from just about everyone. Is that perhaps something that we need to be aware of? That we don't throw down the, yeah, wait until you get old and wise like me. I think it is, because there's a propensity to think that, even if you maybe don't articulate it. You do have more, and the reality is you do have more wisdom. You do have more experience. But is it helpful to let a younger person know that? Maybe on occasion. But all the time? Probably not. Let's continue. I talk about my maturing and how I've noticed that from 20 to 30, I've grown so much. And even at 30, my hands are starting to bother me when it's cold and they lock up. That does seem young, doesn't it, for that sort of thing to happen? Nevertheless, the letter continues. And the older people tell me, you ain't seen nothing yet. While that's probably true, is somebody's expression of a malady an opportunity to trump them? And I'm not talking about politics. Is it really the right response to compare your ache with somebody else's pain? That's an easy thing to do, isn't it? Oh, yeah? Okay, I'll listen to you finish your little story. Let me tell you when I cut off my finger with a chainsaw. That probably not the best way to respond. And that goes for young and old alike. I think older folks need to be careful that we aren't certainly trumping people and maybe not constantly complaining unless it's necessary. I get it. It can be top of mind, nagging pain. It's right there. I get that. But on the other side, whether young or old alike, when somebody complains to you about their health, it's incumbent upon us to genuinely hear it, even if it's for the 17th time. Why? Because we're commanded to bear one another's burdens. Now, I get it. If it's the 1,700th time and it's like, you know, I think I'm getting to the point where I just cannot find much sympathy or empathy in this situation anymore, and you can talk to them. Of course you can. But I'm talking about in general. Let's get back to the letter, shall we? They tell me you ain't seen nothing yet. It almost like they feel a sense of pride that they're older and I haven't gone through the right passage. So they are going to tell me all about how I don't know anything, which I also know that the older I get, the less likely I actually know. I don't understand it. Well, here's the understanding. The aches and pains for older people are scarier. They're more persistent, and they're very possibly long-term, and they're indicators of something worse. Having said that, it is incumbent upon you, when you're younger, to hear old people carp, to lovingly listen, and to carry that burden with them, and to feel it as best you can. Older people, they shouldn't be slapping them down with, yeah, well, my ache and pain is worse than your ache and pain any day of the week, sonny boy. Don't need that. But on the other side, we don't need eye-rolling frustration. And that's what relationship is all about. That's what marriage is about. That's what you're being in a home with your kids is all about. And that is what church is all about. Schools of character for both parties. This is Wretched Radio. Chances are pretty good you love Dr. John MacArthur's Master Seminary in Los Angeles, California, because they equip men to rightly divide the word of truth. But here's the replication strategy. The men from overseas come to Los Angeles, they get equipped, and then they return to their home country to start up a little mini Master Seminary.
All of these guys that are doing this, and there are 100 of our missionaries out there now doing this kind of training, they all come from the Master Seminary. And as a result of that, their theology is solid, sound. It's the same. So there's a unity to all of this. They take basically what they experienced in training at the Master Seminary and Grace Community Church. They train pastors the way they were trained, and they train them to handle the Word of God accurately.
Amazing. Would you please consider sponsoring your own seminary? You can learn more at wretched.org/pastor, wretched.org/pastor.
Some people call it Halloween, others of us call it Reformation Day, but later this month, countless children will be knocking on our doors all over this country. You don't have to turn the porch light off and say, I don't celebrate this day. No, you can seize the opportunity with us here at Fortis Institute. This year, we're offering you a powerful way to engage. For a limited time, you can receive 50 copies of The Man Who Split Time, absolutely free. You just cover the shipping charge. Imagine as children come to your door, you can answer and offer them not just treats, but also the greatest gift of all. That's the message of our Lord Jesus Christ. Each booklet is a chance to plant seeds of faith in young hearts and young minds. Just visit FortisInstitute.org/Halloween to claim your free booklets right now. You just cover the shipping charge. Don't miss this opportunity to shine the light of the gospel on Reformation Day. Order your copies right now at FortisInstitute.org/Halloween.
Preborn Ministries, pro-life ministry, rescuing babies, the war, let me tell you, it's raging out there, and Preborn is right on the front lines providing what is so powerful, ultrasounds. When a woman sees her baby 80% of the time, it's a no-brainer. That's my child. That's a baby in there, not a blob of tissue. Worldview is getting pumped into everybody through Hollywood, social media, the internet, universities, businesses, and government. If you'd be kind enough to consider supporting Preborn Ministries, that would be groovy. Lives are saved. Women, men, hear the gospel. Please consider supporting this network of clinics that is doing such great work. Preborn.org/wretched. Preborn.org/wretched.
Books of the Bible. Luke was a physician and companion of Paul, who wrote an orderly account of the gospel of Jesus Christ. He meticulously details names, places, and events. Luke shows great concern for people of every class, especially overlooked or undesirable people. We are all from various places and classes, but Jesus Christ is the Savior for all mankind. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Earth to Jimmy, nobody cares. Oh, are we on? This is Wretched Radio. Go ahead, Jimmy. Unburden your heart.
I don't even...
Share your woe. Well, I want to hear it.
Somebody will care.
No, I was telling you that...
Here's a dime. Wasn't that a country song?
Here's a quarter. Dime. Call someone who cares.
It was a quarter.
Yeah. Huh?
Okay, so the song isn't quite as old as I thought.
That's right.
What is a... If there is a payphone today...
There's not.
What does it cost?
I have no idea. I don't think there is any.
Well, I would say that currently, underneath this horrific Trump administration that has caused all of this horrible inflation, I mean, I think that's who's in office, because I've been watching the commercials for Kamala. What would it cost? 50 cents? A buck? I don't know, but it used to be a dime.
Mm.
And drop a dime. Here's a dime. Was it a quarter?
It's a quarter.
You'd know better. You're the country
That's
music
right.
guy. All right. What happened when the last really bad hurricane was threatening Atlanta?
So we at home decided to sleep in the basement in case, you know, trees started falling through the roof. And my wife and I blowed up the air mattress that you have in the closet and slept in my office downstairs. And
what, did you leave the kids upstairs?
No. They were down there. Too.
Okay, got it.
But
it just sounded like maybe you were protecting
well, yeah.
you and the missus. The kids,
yeah.
did you see that picture of a sheriff who found a dog that was tethered in the backyard and the floodwaters were up to its belly and the family had abandoned it? Oh. All right. So you're sleeping in the basement on your air mattress,
That's
which
right.
probably deflated in the middle of the night.
No, it was a good one.
A good one.
But 2 weeks later, here's about I've still got a crick in my neck. So I just wanted you to know that because I wanted you to care about me.
Is there something in the line? What am I? I should tell me this is not your propensity. You were hearing Jimmy whine about his sore neck. And you're thinking to myself, let me tell you about the pillow that I just got. I thought it was going to help me out. I ordered it. It was my pillow. It was the guy on Fox News. And I got the pillow. And it's not nearly as good. And since then, and I've had to go to the chiropractor. Don't we tend to respond that way?
That's right.
Get it out of you. Get it out of you. Because I got something to tell you, buddy boy.
Yep.
All right. I don't think that anybody's sinning. But maybe being mindful that when somebody does share a woe, that we actually... receive it. I don't know. Maybe a follow-up question that doesn't involve giving your expert advice because you Googled it once. Tell me exactly where does it hurt in your neck, Jimmy? Because right there?
Uh-huh. Yeah, right there.
Oh, that's your C7 right there. You know, here's what I did. And then on we go to offer medical advice. Relationships are never going to be constant smooth sailing. There's going to be stuff that we say and do that agitates and that annoys. And please note that if you get annoyed by people, there's no doubt about it, you and I then are annoying others because that's just the way that it is. Said this the other day. Oh, I know. Okay. It was a ministry thing. We had interviewed this group of people who said that they could help us. And I just remember thinking it didn't really click. It really wasn't quite a match. And I never thought for a second that they might feel the exact same way. That they would be like, they'd walked out of our office and went, yeah, that just doesn't quite work for us. Why? Because it's my perspective. My understanding of the situation and my judgment on somebody else. Wow, is that a propensity? And relationships bring that out. And that's a good thing. It can be a good thing. Luther said marriage is a school of character. But I think that's true of all of our relationships. And don't forget about the church relationship. Is it possible that this is one of the reasons so many people shop and bop? They just never stay put because somebody does something that bugs them. And then they just pack up and they move on to the next place. That's one of the reasons that we don't grow, if we don't stay in those relationships and we let people just annoy us, we got to learn how to respond to that. Because if what somebody does is not a sin issue, it's merely a preference or an annoyance, if I'm getting bothered by it, they're not the problem, I am. If I am getting short-tempered about somebody, they're not sinning. I don't even know that you should get short-tempered with that, but they're not sinning. They're just doing something. Okay, I got one for you.
Hey, Todd.
Yeah, Jimmy.
Yeah, you're using that pen right now?
Yeah, I am, to click it. What's the problem?
Please stop.
Me too. Me too. But I wasn't sinning, unless, of course, Jimmy expresses to me that, hey, that kind of bugs me. Now I'm sinning. Now, because a brother said it bugs him, so I'm going to stop it. If I keep persisting, well, then I've moved into a different category, which is sin. And now Jimmy can talk to me about it again. But here's the tricky part. He doesn't get to turn up the temperature and become angry about it. Remember, when somebody is sinning, well, they're caught in a trap, man. They can't get out. And you're on a rescue mission, not on a scolding mission. And we see that, the opportunity for that all the time in marriage and in parenting and in our local church, probably with office mates that bug you. They're there so that we can grow in long-suffering and in patience. By the way, Jimmy,
yes.
I found the impersonation guy. No, not Jamie Foxx. Shane Gillis.
Yes.
Shane Gillis.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, see, I'm not sure this is a good impersonation. You can actually tell who it is.
Trump gave what I think was probably one of the greatest speeches of world leaders given. You know, it's got to be up there with like Churchill, Gettysburg Address. It's the night the United States killed the leader of ISIS. Trump comes out of the Situation Room at like midnight in the White House, and he walks down that tunnel like he's, and gives a press conference like he's giving a post-game MBA, and just goes, Abu Bakar al-Baghdadi is dead. He died like a dog.
See, he laughs at himself. Are you supposed to do that? Kind of endearing, actually.
I didn't change one word of that. That's what he opened with. And then he did 40 minutes. The speech is 40 minutes in front of the whole world. Abu. We could hear him crying. I said, Abu, don't cry. Let me tell you something. Abu cried. He cried quite a bit. I wouldn't have cried. Crybaby Baghdadi. That's what we were all calling.
Hey, speaking of Donald Trump, if you get a chance, tonight's the night. We're going to talk politics on a Fortas Institute webinar. Dr. Andrew Walker, he's like pretty smart. Tom Buck, he's pretty smart too. And then I will be tagging along as Jason Allen. He's the director of the Fortas Fellows Program here at Fortas Institute. We're just going to talk about how we weigh the issues when it comes to an election. Because I think the scale system has changed. I think that time has changed the rules on us. And I think that that's one of the reasons that we see a lot of evangelical fracturing on the issue, and why we even see some evangelical agitation. So here's the tease for you to tune in. You can go to fortasinstitute.org/webinar. Andrew Walker, I'm going to try to represent his position super fairly. He would say that you should vote for Donald Trump. Maybe don't like it, not excited about it, but he's definitely the guy who is going to be promoting less evil without any conscience pangs to that. On the other hand, you've got Dr. Tom Buck, and he's going to, I hope I get his position right, say, in good conscience, I can't do it right now. It's crossed the line. And he holds that position, I would say rather tentatively. He's very quick to say, you know, I'll listen. And if I'm persuaded, then I'll change my mind and do it. So those two men are going to engage as Christian gentlemen. They've got a difference of opinion, as you probably do. You agree or disagree with one of those guys. I think one of the questions, one of them is, okay, so how did two smart guys arrive at two different conclusions? I think that's where we need to consider weights and measures. But I think the other thing that needs to be considered is, how can we go about the business of disagreeing without getting mad at each other? Now, as for Evangelicals for Harris, yeah, that is just I can't see that, no matter how you slice it, to vote for somebody that's that even. Now, I know what somebody might say. Well, wait a second. He's not pro-life either. Right. And that's why the rules have changed. And that's why the weighing of issues has gotten far more complicated. So tonight, FortisInstitute.org/webinar, we will try to discuss this issue like Christian gentlemen. Hope you can join us. This is Wretched Radio.
And it's now time for your daily Fortis News Break, a production of Fortis Institute. I'm Jimmy Hicks, and our top story comes from Fort Worth, Texas, where a family group is planning to protest an all-ages witch pride event at a store run by a self-described blood-oathed priestess of witchcraft. Sounds inviting, doesn't it? Spiritual warfare? It's not just a metaphor. In Austin, Texas, the Attorney General Ken Paxton is suing the city for allocating $400,000 to fund out-of-state travel expenses for abortions. The city's budget includes money for airfare, gas, hotels, and even child care for women seeking abortions. The irony here, if you can smell it, seems lost on the Austin City Council. They're willing to pay for child care so a woman can travel to end the life of a child. Maybe instead of funding abortion tourism, they could put money toward actually supporting mothers and children in need. On to Minnesota now, where the Minnesota Vikings are under fire for warning about the rising Islamophobia on the one-year anniversary of the Hamas terrorist attacks against Israel. Their post also mentioned anti-Semitism and prayed for the 101 hostages still held by Hamas. When you try to play both sides of a conflict like this, you're going to end up, here's a football term, fumbling the truth. Look, sometimes there's just not a moral equivalent, and pretending there is doesn't make you virtuous. It makes you part of the problem. Democrats in Congress are now claiming that public schools, which are mostly run by Democrats, are deeply racist. They're pushing for a radical overhaul of school discipline to address racial disparities, citing a Government Accountability Office report showing black girls are 5.2 times more likely to be suspended than white girls. I don't know the validity in all these reports and studies, but what I do know is when the people running the system start calling their own system racist, it's probably a good time to start looking in the mirror. But that might make too much sense. Now to the state of Georgia, where the Supreme Court has reinstated the state's heartbeat bill, which is aimed at protecting unborn babies at around 6 weeks of pregnancy. This comes just a week after a lower court struck it down and Planned Parenthood called it devastating. But you know what's really devastating? The fact that we're even needing to decide on a bill at all, no matter how many weeks. Because life begins not with a heartbeat, but with conception. And finally, let's wrap up with some good news today. A Good Samaritan in Archer County, Texas, saved a woman trapped in her sinking car after it plunged into a canal, and the passerby saw her and didn't hesitate to jump in and pull her to safety. In a world that often seems so dark, wouldn't we be much better off if these kinds of stories didn't stand out, but were actually the norm? And that wraps up today's Fortis News Break. I'm Jimmy Hicks, and if you want more, make sure you download Fortis Plus or sign up to become a Fortis Insider for exclusive daily content. You can do both at FortisInstitute.org. And don't forget, you can also subscribe to Fortis News on your favorite podcast app to get these updates daily. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.
God has given the church many gifts for the building up of the body. One gift is mercy. Those who possess this gift are able to show compassion and comfort the afflicted, people who are sick, dying, or bereaved. God cares about the things that afflict us and has provided comfort in troubled times. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
Like a sneak peek without the peak part. sneak part. This is Wretched Radio. Tonight, Fortis Institute webinar. It is absolutely free. Dr. Andrew Walker, Dr. Tom Buck, I, Jason Allen, will be discussing the upcoming election and how we evangelicals have sorted the issues. And I think we're all going to learn a little something because not everybody sees eye to eye. But when that happens on an issue like this, can we not see eye to eye without wanting to punch the other person in the eye? That is something that I believe you will see modeled tonight. If you join us for that webinar, you've got good men, godly, sound, Jesus-loving men who actually respect one another and know that they have a difference of opinion about the vote that's coming up for all of us, and yet they aren't throwing grenades at one another. And you are going to eavesdrop. You get to be a fly on the wall and hear that conversation. You get to ask questions, too, because we'll do the question thing and we'll moderate all of that. Join us tonight, FortisInstitute.org/webinar. And this is kind of a sneak peek. And I've actually been looking forward to listening to this. This is Dr. Andrew Walker. He's one of our fellows at Fortis Institute. He's at Southern Seminary, the ethics prof. There was an article that I saw 6 weeks ago. And it was raising the question, not begging. By the way, did you see Alistair Begg is going to be retiring in a year? It raised a question because there's a program that's being forwarded to help people receive transplants more regularly. And that is, the program is to offer people money to pay them for their organs because they don't need it. I mean, it's nice to have it, but they don't need it. And you'll get it. I think if I recall, it was you get a tax credit on it. And it was substantial. And I remember reading that and going, well, that's interesting. How do we sort through that brave new world issue? And I ruminated and I chewed on it. And I came to the conclusion, let's ask Andrew Walker. So he did a hot take. This is all the stuff that you'll find at Fortis Plus. If you hear the plus sign, doesn't mean money. You can go to Fortis Plus. It's all of our stuff, like what you're about to hear. It's free. No subscription. It's free. And there are many there's a new hot take every single day. And this is Dr. Andrew Walker's hot take on the subject of, should we as Christians be in favor of a program that promotes organ selling? How would you noodle that through? As you listen to Andrew Walker, I think you're going to hear a guy who's obviously whip smart. He's going to help us walk through the issue. But please notice the tone and that he doesn't come out swinging at people who maybe have a different perspective on this. This is Dr. Andrew Walker. Should we be in favor of organ selling?
Hey, everybody. Andrew Walker here, ethics fellow. And I want to offer a hot take on an article that I just read that was suggesting the possibility that we could sell our kidneys to individuals who might need a kidney transplant. Not just donate or give, but functionally sell our kidney. And I think this is a really helpful type of argument for us to think about how we do Christian ethics, to think about the fact that there are good motives behind wanting to create a market environment where there's a need that can be met voluntarily by a free exchange. The problem is that whenever we want to begin thinking about organ donation in the terms of commerce, we're no longer talking about donating, because donating sounds like there's virtue and valor attached to it with no strings attached, that you're doing something out of your own free and goodwill, something you might refer to as even a virtue ethics type of approach to this particular situation. But selling is fundamentally not donating. And so this kind of changes the moral calculus of why we would have organ donation in the first place. I think another principle we want to think about here is that our bodies belong to God. So our bodies are first and foremost not ours. our bodies are not first and foremost issues pertaining to the market. Our body belongs to God. As 1 Corinthians talks about, we are to use our body to glorify God. What we learn from Scripture, from general revelation handed down to us in Scripture, is that God made us the types of human beings that need two kidneys. Yes, we can function with only one kidney, but we're not intended to function with only one kidney. We're intended to function with two kidneys. And so if we are creating market incentives where individuals can take healthy bodies and willfully use them for a good purpose even, but there will be negative circumstances for bodies that only have one kidney, I think that raises the question about issues of bodily integrity. Should we be using our bodies for some type of utilitarian or consequentialist type of outcome? And no doubt, we want to applaud the fact that there are good motives behind this. But one of the principles in Scripture that we read about is that just because there is a desirable end in view, it doesn't mean that you can then pursue whatever means you want to obtain a good end, that there are some things that are just intrinsically problematic. And I think selling your kidney would fall in this category. The last thing I would say is this, is that in any ethical situation, particularly pertaining to the market and public policy, we have to think about the unintended consequences. Individuals who will be donating their kidneys, this will not shock you, will very likely not be wealthy individuals because they will not find themselves to be put in the situation where they would need to potentially be donating a kidney, which means, without a doubt, this would be a situation where you would have individuals on the lower rung of the socioeconomic ladder who would be putting themselves in this position to sell their kidneys. So I'll end by simply saying this. There is no verse that says thou shalt not sell your kidney. There's no verse that says thou shalt not donate a kidney. And I want to say I firmly agree with the goodness of donating a kidney, perhaps in the instance of a friend or family member who needs one, or in tragic situations where someone may pass away and they have organs that can still be donated. I think that is appropriate and a virtuous thing to do. What I don't think we want to do is then to just immediately commercialize this and create incentive structures where we begin to commercialize the body, and then in the end of it, having situations where there are perverse incentive structures that negatively impact what will doubtlessly be individuals who are on the lower economic level.
What a jerk. Do you agree with Dr. Walker? 3 points were made. Were you persuaded that commercializing selling of organs is probably not best Christian practice? Although, did you hear him clearly? He can't bang his fist on the issue. And this is a good reminder. There are some issues where we can't bang our fist, but sometimes we want to bang them anyway. That's where the breakdown often happens amongst us, isn't it? That we think that we're right on an issue. Of course we do, otherwise we wouldn't think that way. And because of our rightness, we insist that everybody agree, but there are some more challenging issues, and we're being confronted with more and more of these issues. One of the issues is how evangelicals are processing voting. I'm telling you, the system is different today. How we made a decision about a political candidate in 1980 is different than it was in 2000, and it's different now in 2024. And this has caused a lot of people to say, well, that's not consistent. And I would say this is part of the brilliance of the Bible. It recognizes time. Was just reading John Calvin on the subject of the kingdom of the keys. And this has to do with the authority to proclaim and to announce what has already been determined in heaven, forgiveness of sins or not, binding and loosing. Who gets that authority? Who gets it? And that's kind of the debate that people have had. And one of the things that Calvin said in figuring out your church polity about who has the authority to do this or that, is it elder-led, elder-rule, congregational model, he allowed for what he said were the complexities of contemporary life, where you are, your zip code, what time it is, and all of the circumstances, all of those different issues that make something complex. And he said, so a church can kind of sort it and figure it out. And the Bible does that regularly too. It's flexible enough. Well, it speaks clearly when it's wrong or right, but it's flexible enough to recognize, you know, these issues are going to get complex. And they're going to be, and you need to think things through sometimes differently as a Christian today than you did 20 years ago. And that's what we'll be doing tonight with Dr. Andrew Walker and Tom Buck. Please join us, fortisinstitute.org/webinar. It's free. This is Wretched Radio. You're familiar with Tomorrow Clubs. It's a ministry that we have happily lauded over the years. We commend them heartily to you because they are an efficient ministry. They've got the gospel right, and they go to places where the gospel is usually not propagated. Very poor parts of the globe, specifically Eastern Europe and in parts of Africa, the Tomorrow Clubs, working in conjunction with a local church to preach the gospel to the kids, sing, have them memorize scripture, pray, and entire towns are getting saved. We love the Tomorrow Clubs, and if you want to be encouraged and be reminded that Jesus is building his church, they just reached 1,000 of these clubs. That's encouraging, and I'd like to encourage you to please consider become a ministry partner to the Tomorrow Clubs. If you like evangelistic ministries, they're the ticket. They're the bomb. You can learn more at tomorrowclubs.org/wretched, tomorrowclubs.org/wretched.
Thank you so much for listening to Wretched Radio today. And if you're anything like us, you feel the constant pressure to play catch up with today's rapid fire changes in this culture. We get it. And that's why Fortis Institute exists. Every day, we're bringing you content that will keep you grounded in biblical truth. Videos that dive into hot topics that are happening today. Podcasts covering everything from marriage and parenting to deep dives in theology. And of course, our webinars, which feature some of the sharpest Christian thinkers around. And the best part about it all, it's absolutely free, no strings attached. But here's the thing, we do need your help to keep this going. If you would prayerfully consider becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner, you're not just supporting us, you're helping us equip believers. So why not get the information? You can do that right now at fortisinstitute.org and get answers to any questions you might have about becoming an ongoing monthly gospel partner. Wretched, amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Would you like the university experience without the, you know, university experience? The Masters University invites you to visit their campus, or you can visit them online at masters.edu/wretched to discover a Christian college that is biblical, that offers all of the academic excellence you desire, sports, athletics, arts, communication, all of the activities of, you know, a secular university without the, you know, secular parts. Please consider the Masters University online, or of course, on-campus learning, undergrad, master's, and doctoral programs. It's Masters University, the university with the university experience without the university experience. Masters.edu/wretched.
Lexicon. There are many words to help us understand the nature of the Bible. Words like sensus literalis. The Bible is to be read in the literal sense, the way the author and original audience would have understood it. There is no code, no secret meaning to be uncovered. The Bible is plainly written so that all people can know God through its pages. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
We don't need no education.
The song was never my favorite. Yeah, stronger than that, actually.
Ugh. We don't need no thought control.
This is Wretched Radio. Let's go visit a mountain, shall we?
Oh, dark sarcasm in the classroom.
You say, wait a second. If we're going to talk about education, what does that have to do with a mountain? Well, if you're in the New Apostolic Reformation movement, you know exactly what I'm talking about. There are seven mountains that must be climbed and conquered by the Christian. Government, the realm of politics, Hollywood, institutions, business, and of course, education. And it's the Christian's job to get those realms, those mountains under our control. And then Jesus returns. You say, who's thinking like that? And I would say the fastest growing expression of Christianity in the world is thinking like that. And there are rallies that are being held around the globe to promote it, especially in America. Well, we're going to visit the mountain of education, not to climb it and conquer it, but to perhaps understand it and maybe just get a sense of what's going on inside of those brick walls. Story number one for your consideration from the Daily Mail. A British school child has been officially allowed to identify as, go ahead and guess, you're going to say a cat because that's the furry thing, right? They're all acting like cats. Oh no, this would be a canine, specifically a wolf. You know, if he wants to identify as a false teacher, I guess I don't have a problem with that now that I think about it. Teachers are supporting the youngster who suffers from species dysphoria. And so they're encouraging him to be a wolf. And of course, we'll have to do everything we can to provide an environment that helps them. I was just reading that. Maybe I've got that here. This number, I think it's 3.3% of kids. Yeah, I've got it right here. 3.3% of kids. This is ABC News. Can you say those words together? ABC News, 3.3% of U.S. high schoolers identify as transgender. Whoa. Another 2.2% identified as questioning. What in the world? What is with this increase? Personally, I think a lot of it has to do with peer pressure. If you want to get affirmation, if you want to get attention, I'll tell you, this is one way to do it. Because if a kid has not been getting attention at home, he or she will seek it elsewhere. And this is one of the most, I think, effective ways to accomplish that. You want attention? Say you're trans. Say you're not heterosexual and you are going to get attention. About 7 in 10 questioning students and transgender students experience persistent feelings of sadness or hopelessness, which the CDC states is a marker of depressive symptoms. So in this particular article, of course, what do they focus on? That we need to be more accepting. We need to have more programs in the schools that are welcoming and affirming because we don't want their mental health to suffer. And of course, we don't want the kids to take their own lives. Well, of course, we don't want the kids to take their own lives, but that ain't the way to help them. The way to help them is to understand you're the gender that you are. That's what reality is. What you see is what you are, and you're not a wolf. And how is our government responding? Well, in this particular article, the recommendation is more programs, more understanding, more celebration of trans people. And now it appears it'll even be people who think that they're wolves. Saw one of these people the other day. We were sitting outside just kind of watching the world go by. And it was a boy who was probably about 6'2", big kid, kind of dressing like a girl, and could overhear the conversation as they walked by. And in a past year, we would have said, that's somebody who's troubled. That's somebody who's really troubled. We need to help that person. Now, we celebrate them. That ain't loving. If you've been perhaps afraid to speak up on this subject, you maybe consider doing that. I was reading a different article on, it was, I know, It was on the legislation in Great Britain that doesn't allow you to pray silently in front of abortion clinics. How bonkers is that? Well, the woman, she ended up getting like $17,000 for her difficulties because they actually arrested her. But this article, I think it was from WNG, it asked the question, what if we Christians just broke these laws? In fact, the headline of it is laws that should be broken. That's, I get the sentiment. I just don't think that's the best way to frame it or to phrase it. I think it should be sometimes there are laws that we just simply cannot obey because either they're a command to sin, a forbidding of obeying a command from King Jesus, or a violation of jurisdictional authority in the realm of family, government, or church. So this is talking about the law that creates buffer zones in Great Britain. And then it offered this. What if every Christian began treating irrational and evil laws, procedures, or even social norms as they ought to be treated by refusing to comply? I think there's way too many things grouped in that. As a rule, we obey the laws unless we're forbidden to obey Jesus, we're commanded to sin, or there is an encroachment on jurisdictional authority, particularly in the church or the home. And so this, the just the positioning of this is, well, let's just break those laws. Well, hold on. We're not supposed to be the unnecessary law-breaking people, because they ask the question, what if every Christian began doing this? Well, the answer would be the book of Judges. We'd have absolute anarchy. So we need to be more thoughtful and not lump evil laws, procedures, social norms that we can just refuse to comply. It's more thoughtful and nuanced than that. But as far as cultural norms go, I do think that is something that we could consider kind of pushing against, if you will. This article goes on to say, what if we refuse to put our preferred pronouns on our medical forms? Yeah, I think I'm down with that. What if we stopped walking past the LGBTQ pride display at the library without at least mentioning politely to the librarian, I just want you to know, I wish that weren't here. Kids shouldn't be seeing that. I'm down with that. What if we explicitly demanded the pediatrician, the nurse, or the teacher not speak to our children about their gender identity? And to that I say, I think we should. Now, everybody gets to make that decision because they've got circumstances that they need to consider. There might be implications, timing for families, etc. But that is, I do believe, the most loving thing we can do. If my kid is going to a school where somebody is being celebrated for thinking they're a wolf, being silent on some of these things, I don't think that we're commanded with that we must speak up on every single issue. I think that's up to the individual conscience to determine that. But maybe we need to be doing more of that. Homeschooling. This is kind of a connected story, isn't it? It's on the rise since COVID. Everybody said, oh, homeschooling is up because of COVID. Well, perhaps. But guess what? Those numbers aren't shrinking. In fact, they are growing. It appears in 20 out of the 21 states that were analyzed, homeschooling statistics are going up anywhere from 2%. That's Georgia. And you know why it's so low in Georgia? We already do. All the way up to 29% in Delaware. As to the reason for this post-pandemic rise in homeschooling, the report described the cause as unknown. It's not driven by a global pandemic or sudden disruptions to traditional schooling. I think what it's connected to are schools that celebrate confused children, whether it's sexual, gender, or of the canine variety. Hey, have you been wondering what are the benefits of artificial intelligence? Surprise! They've already been doing some studying. This is from Gizmodo. That people are using it, this won't shock you. AI-generated porn. That's loverly. And it helps students cheat without being detected. Cool. That leads us to another school called a seminary. Religion News. Now, this is from Princeton Theological Seminary. They asked the students, can AI write a sermon? And the answer is, well, sure it can. The question is, should we use it? And the answer is a definitive, absolutely not. But it got me to thinking, because it's going to happen. as the argument becomes more pervasive that, hey, it saves the pastor a lot of time and he gets to do a lot, or she gets to do a lot of other things, it's really good that we use AI. Then you know what they're going to be teaching? This is my Nostradamus-like prognostication. This is my prediction for the future. Seminaries are going to start offering acting classes or presentation classes, which to a degree is a part of homiletics delivery, but these are going to be full-blown classes. Why? Because you don't have to learn how to write a sermon. You just need to learn how to put on a show and deliver it. My prediction for seminaries, get ready for the pastors in training to be taking drama classes courtesy of AI. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.